listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, a Frankie's Friday Fire. I wanted to get Trap on, Blankers, on a Frankie's Friday Fire, because nobody brings the fire better than Trap.
I love that guy. He called me last night, and, you know, he and Lisa are California kids, so they're always catching up. And then, unsolicited, he was like, you know what? I was like, look, man, I'm not going to sit there and hammer you when everybody saw your tweet. He goes, you want me on? He goes, and Trap learned something from our radio days together, because he's like, hold on. He goes, let's not talk about it. Let's keep it organic so I can give you the best for tomorrow. I go, wow, I cannot believe you just brought that towards me the way I would normally say it, but I'm so proud of you. So, yeah, it was awesome. I mean, he's a great dude, and we became dear friends when we did the show together. But, I mean, people don't understand the talent that he had and how he's almost soft-selling it, but he really feels like in a different environment with a different defensive system, he would have been a whole different player.
I think scheme is more important in football than it is in any other sport, especially on the defensive side. Like, if you have a great quarterback, you want to be – like, look at Lamar Jackson. I mean, I think he's the most glaring example. If you wanted to sit Lamar Jackson back in a shotgun and run a run and shoot, what kind of success is Lamar Jackson going to have?
I actually thought that's what he was going to say when he said Baltimore, but, of course, he's always focused on defense. But that's the one that you and I always bring up, that I always point to, going, the smartest coaches are the ones that adapt their system to the player. Don't let, you know, the player have to force, don't force them to play your system. And I think that that's just where he was a victim of circumstance by getting into the wrong team that wasn't willing to alter their defensive system, and it didn't work out for him.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN. Keith on the text line saying, have him on every week during the season. Trap was preaching. We might do that.
We might, yeah.
Really good football mind.
Well, truth be told, too, and he's tight. He's got kids that are is playing sports at different levels. But he said, honestly, when we tried to get him a year ago, he goes, Joel, I just haven't been watching any football on the pro level. I've been so busy up until Saturday afternoons, and he watches Florida State.
Yeah, it sounded like he was bullish on the Texans, though. We'll get to that in just a second. I wanted to get in what he had to say a bit about the Jimbo and Nick Saban dilemma, the controversy, the heavyweight fight between the two SEC coaches. Nick Saban went on Sirius ESPN yesterday talking about this whole situation, his apology tour, basically. Here was Saban yesterday talking about the situation.
You know, I really didn't mean to single anybody out. I apologize for that. But, you know, it's the whole system. And is this a sustainable system? And is it really, you know, good for college football? I think name, image, and likeness is good for college football.
That was the first time I've heard that, to be honest with you, Blankers. That doesn't read as much. That doesn't sound as much of an apology as it reads.
I was going to say,
perfectly honest.
You brought it up twice, and I'm like, well, I'm interested in maybe I missed one, because he tried to say that, well, basically what he did say was, I should not have called anybody out by name, but he never followed that up by saying, and so for those that I singled out, I apologize. He never apologized. He just kind of sung and danced around it and then alluded to what you did. Look, I didn't think that was going to get out. But that's on him. And that's something that when we had our long discussion about it yesterday, I said, like, you are always on, no matter what, because of the life that we live in, the era that we live in, with phones being video recorders and recorders, and, you know, the ability to put everything out there as on record. And I think he got to Deion. I think Deion took his call, because Deion Sanders kind of turned the corner a little bit. And though he did, you know, kind of have some things to say about the things that were said, he also said, I understand why he was doing it. He was doing it to recruits. But the way Jimbo's handled it and continues to handle it shows you, and he said flat out, these are guys that have coached together, that have been connected together for a long period of time, and Jimbo said he's done.
Yeah. I mean, he also said he wasn't afraid of confrontation and then was ducking his calls. So, like, I think both of them were acting a little bit childish yesterday, but I also understand Jimbo Fisher defending his coaches, defending his players. What I think, though, is that also both things can be true, right? Like, Saban could have kept A&M and Miami and Jackson State, out of his mouth, while also the secondary part of that, the name, image, and likeness being this wild, wild west. So I think you can separate the two. Was Nick Saban wrong putting A&M in his mouth? Maybe. I think he was using it as an example. Okay, that's fine. That to me is not even really like the conversation today. It was definitely the conversation yesterday. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, 100%. That was the lead story around all of the country, which that's great. SEC football being talked about by everybody in the country in the middle of May is pretty awesome for the SEC. The secondary part to it that I wanted to get to is the money, because I don't think Nick Saban's wrong with how this is this willy-nilly, wild, wild west. We saw Jordan Addison committing to USC, the transfer from Pitt, and reports are he's getting a $3.5 million NIL. So it is becoming free agency in college sports. So it's either you have to legislate it and figure out a way to like adapt to this new modern-day era of college football, or it's going to be the wild, wild west, and that's just the way it's going
to
be.
Yeah, and I think that, Jeremy, it leads itself to why Saban had that kind of spilled milk attitude, because it used to be that he didn't have to focus or worry on that stuff, and that he was going to have the best recruiting class every year, and he was going to be in the Final Four at the end of the season, and he was going to be a perennial powerhouse. And now, if it gets to, and continues to be, a wild, wild west, like you were saying, and it's very accurate, and the NCAA, who is slow to react to anything, takes its time in trying to kind of tweak the system so it doesn't get out of hand, it is going to be a free-for-all. And from season to season, it's going to be free agency. It's going to be people leaving, not just for the university and the education they can get or the program and the coach. It's going to be all about how much can I make in a short period of time. Look, we talked about De'Eriq King when he could have gone to the NFL and probably would have been on a practice squad as a player that a team wants to develop and make, you know, a very minimum salary, as opposed to if he stayed at Miami and had four or five NIL deals and was making seven figures. I mean, who's not going to take that and take your chances? Because you never know when the gravy train ends. Not everybody gets to make it to the pro level and then not only gets paid to play, but plays at such a level where they get great pay for a lot of years. And so for a lot of these kids and a lot of these parents and a lot of these families that are saying, this is our one shot, you know, and Eminem, you don't want to blow it. So you want to go wherever you can capitalize the most as quick as possible.
See, the issue, I don't mind players getting paid, because I feel like if somebody's willing to pay it, then they're probably worth it, right? So, like, I'm totally fine with boosters and donors paying players X amount of dollars if they want them to, you know, eat a pizza or sign autographs at, you know, the local car dealership. I have no problem with the money that's being spent. I think the one thing that annoys me is that you have a player like Addison. I think Addison's a perfect example in this case, that plays really well at Pitt, and let's put it bluntly, he outplays the level of Pitt football. Mm-hmm. So now he's a high power five level receiver that has offers from USC and Alabama and every single blue blood and pedigree. I feel bad for Pitt there, because Pitt's the one who invested in Addison. Pitt's the one that brought Addison in. Pitt's the one that developed Addison as a football player. And then all of a sudden he's like, you know what? I'm out of here. Screw you guys. I'm going to go sign for the most amount of money that I can make. So I don't know what the right fit is there, the right fix. I don't know if I love the free one-year transfer, if it means that a guy's getting a $3.5 million NIL out of it. So that's the part that kind of rubs me the wrong way. I don't mind the money. But I don't mind the finances in it. I mind the 1 year, all of a sudden, I'm a free agent. I'm going to go capitalize.
But here's the thing, Jeremy, just to play devil's advocate on the other side of that, right? So from the perspective of, it's always been about the team, and that's what colleges have always wanted you to be in their program for. It's about the team. It's about doing what's necessary for the team's success. We make all the profit. Don't worry about that. You just have to be dedicated to the team, and we're giving you an education, right? But first, we saw players for their own individuality and their success going forward say, I'm going to sit out bowl games. I'm going to sit out games at the end of the year because I have bigger fish to fry, and I need to make sure that I am at my peak and I am in my best health so that I can make the most money. Now, it's losing more control, because in the example you gave, you're losing Kenny Pickett as your quarterback. So yeah. Now I'm not looking out for what's best for the program. I'm looking out what's best for me. I got a couple years left. I have a quarterback that's leaving. I'm going to have an inexperienced quarterback, no matter who it is, probably coming in. I need to get where my talents can be shown off the most, and I have the best chance to succeed, both as a team, but more importantly, individually, so I can get to the next level at a high enough level to where I'm going to get paid again.
I don't disagree. Like, okay, that's a good counterpoint, but I don't think that the development and the putting him in the best position to succeed was his priority.
Oh, money was first and foremost,
exactly.
Right? But he also knew in the back of his mind, if Pittsburgh gave him the same NIL deals, it still wasn't going to be great for him, because we've seen it happen where if you don't have the right quarterback throwing you the football – no matter how good you are, you may be an afterthought or be looked at lesser than because of the overall situation that you had no control of. So if he's going to – Pittsburgh would have had to knock it out of the park to keep him there as long as he had the ability to leave one time without penalty. Why wouldn't you if you knew you could get to a greener pasture both financially and from a quarterback position so you could flourish not only in the short term but as it relates to you getting to the next level for the long term?
Right, yeah, and I get that. I get that. I just – and that is the way that it's built right now. That's the way that it's currently – you know, the rules are in the NCAA. I just don't know if that's the best thing. I don't know if that's the best thing for the overall product. And I'm not trying to take money out of the players' hands. I think the players deserve all of the money that they're getting. 713-780-ESPN if you want to weigh in. 713-780-3776. Today, the anniversary of a very big moment in Houston sports history. We'll tell you what it was and when can the certain team that we're talking about get back to those experiences. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ellie out of the corner for three. Mario Ellie with a three with 7.1 seconds to play.
Game winner for the Rockets in Game 7 against the Suns in the desert. Anniversary of the Mario Ellie kiss of death. And Blankers, you lived this. I'm sure that
right behind Rudy on the bench when it went in. It was.
Can you see yourself in the video? Really?
Yeah, the documentaries. I've actually posted freeze frames of it. We were not working that day because it was an NBC game. So thankfully, our PR staff put us right behind the Rockets, the row That's behind awesome. The coaches, and. It was the ultimate scenario of no, yes. Because
right.
the yeah. way the play developed and the way Rudy wanted it to go down was they wanted to run the clock down more.
Probably wanted the final shot, right.
Yep, and they did not want to go cross-court no matter what. And the cross-court pass happened, and all of a sudden you could see the coaching staff just losing it, going no. And then it made it through, and they were like, okay, we still got time. And it went up. And then when he nailed it, it was just all hell broke loose. And it was just such a gratifying feeling because – of what Danny Ainge had done to Mario, what Charles had said in the middle of the series when they went up 2-0, and the way that they clawed and scratched back when Clyde, the one game, couldn't get out of bed. It was crazy. We were staying in a Ritz-Carlton in Scottsdale, and the nurse was trying to give him IVs all day, and when we got on the team buses to go to the arena, we were told there's no way. And about 8 minutes before tip-off, he walked in the locker room, and you could have heard a pin drop.
Wow.
And he just said, let's go do this. And you could have seen every guy's face in that locker room say, we will not let him down. And he had nothing. He could not do much. But just him being there was enough to change the tide of a game. And it was awesome.
First time that an NBA team came back from 3-1 in playoff history with only one home game, if memory serves me correct. And you could even see, like what you talked about with the Rocket, it was tied, 15 seconds left or whatever. You could even see Mario Ellie, hesitant to take the shot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't catch and shoot. Like, it was like, okay, we're waiting for the final shot, but I am just so darn wide open, I have to take this. Like, there was a moment of hesitation.
No, and that's Mario in a nutshell, right? A New York kid, he had paid his dues by playing in, seven different countries, finally got opportunities. But when he got that one, he was like, this is what I'm made for. This is what I'm wired for. And he was not hesitating at all. And to this day, there was, when you talk to him about it, there's no doubt in his mind that he was taking it and making it. And then, of course, when he blew Joe Klein the kiss, it just engraved him in Rockets history forever.
Yeah, it was awesome. 713-780-ESPN. Do you remember that moment? Where were you? What were you feeling? 713-780-3776. It is a Frankie's Friday Fire. You bring the heat. $50 to Frankie's Italian Kitchen is yours. Got some good text in already. 713-780-ESPN. And look, playoff basketball is awesome. I love postseason basketball. I think it's great. The Rockets haven't experienced it in a little bit now. Even getting into the Golden State-Dallas series, looking at that Miami-Boston Boston game from yesterday as well. Boston's blowing the brakes off the Heat, by the way.
Woo.
That was a desperate team that played well last night.
And they got two guys back, and you can see how important they are. To a lot of teams, you're like, it's Al Horford. Marcus Smart. But, boy, those two guys came to play, and Marcus Smart showed you as a glue guy, Swiss Army knife, whatever you call him. They need him if they're going to win any series at all.
Yeah, that looks like it's shaping up to be a long series. I think it's going to be a good one. But that series, even Golden State-Dallas, they'll play tonight, game two. Golden State leaves that series 1-0. But I wanted to get your thoughts on this. Because the Rockets, look, I think that we're all liking the direction that the Rockets are going. There's still a lot of work to be done. But Jalen Green, first-team all-rookie team, so he's showing that you know, the Rockets, 1 year in, hitting on that pick. They're going to have the number three pick of the NBA draft unless they move on from that pick, trade it somehow, some way. It looks like Paolo Banchero, the consensus says that that's going to be the pick. So everybody likes the direction that the Rockets are going. But when can the Rockets have this postseason fun again? When can Rocket fans experience all the fun of the kiss of death back in the 90s? All of the fun of playoff basketball that, you know, the Golden State, Dallas, Miami, Boston fan bases are feeling right now?
I'm telling you, Jeremy, as much as I don't want to burst anybody's bubble, but I think as we consistently have to talk about reset buttons and rebuilds and where they are, I think they are, to get to that level, I think they're a good 4 or 5 years away. I just feel like...
That long?
Yeah. I mean,
Four or five years?
Yeah, I think they can make the playoffs again, but I think to be where you were talking about where...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, big plays matter, and they have a chance to go very, very, very far or deep in the playoffs, especially when you look at the landscape of what's around you in the Western Conference with the young teams on the rise like Memphis and Minnesota, with the veteran teams that aren't going anywhere like Golden State, and except for that, you know, that last game seven, Phoenix, and they still have, you know, they still have their rosters intact, but they've got tough decisions to make. It's not going to be an easy run, and that's why you have to make sure you don't swing and miss. It's a lot of what we said with the Texans, but you have more than the Texans have. You have a nucleus of young players that look like and have already proven they can play in this league, and some of them may end up being really big-time players in this league. So now you just got to keep adding assets and pieces until the right time to where you will add veterans. You're going to get a whole boatload of money in another year or so when you get Wall off the books. And then you can start dabbling in free agency to get the right veterans in the mix. But I don't feel like it's going to be overnight. And I feel like if I'm being realistic, I think they make the playoffs in the next three. And I think they really are competing in 4 years, 4 or 5 years.
I think that the big moments, what you're talking about, I think you meant playoffs at first. I think it's a fair way to put it. I think the most realistic scenario which the Rockets can first get to the playoffs and, like, you know, probably be one of the bottom seeds, maybe even that play-in to get into the playoffs. I think they can get it done in 2020. Let me try to do the math real quick on the air. Not next year, but the year after. And it's important that the Rockets are good the year after next, because that's whenever the Thunder start to get their first-round draft picks, too. So you don't want that to be a lottery pick, and then all of a sudden you don't even get that pick because Oklahoma City owns the rights. Thank you, Daryl Morey, and the Russell Westbrook trade. I believe that the Rockets can get to the playoffs a year after next, because next year there's still going to be growing pains. Jalen Green in a sophomore season, there's going to be growing pains there. Whoever you draft at number three, going to be growing pains there. You also have the number 17 pick, and maybe Rafael Stone can get creative and package a veteran or picks and move up. Who knows? I think the Rockets have a lot of options. And they're also going to have a lot of money to spend the year after next, because that's when Wall's contract comes off the books. I believe that the earliest possible scenario of the Rockets to be a playoff team again would be the year after next. Now, it's going to take a few more years to become a real contender, but I believe that's a realistic timeline for where the
Rockets
are.
Does that include the gray area? Because they won't call it the playoffs, and they won't call it the regular season, and the stats don't count. But that play-in tournament, the gray area, I could see them getting into.
Do you have to win that? I mean, I know technically you have to win it to be considered a playoff team. I consider that's postseason basketball.
Okay.
That's postseason basketball.
That's why I think it's going to be 3 years before they are truly a playoff team again. But I hope I'm wrong, because at least I see progress. I see talent. I see guys lining up. Now, I think that, again, as you always point out, and we are very, very quick to promote, we are honest at all costs. And the one thing that I'll say about the Rockets is, and Rafael Stone, you should have traded both Christian Wood and Eric Gordon at the deadline. And it was more important addition by subtraction to give more guys minutes and more opportunities for guys to play. In the case of Wood, it was also a really bad apple in a really good basket of fruit that you don't need to be stinking up for the rest of us. So I think, and he, you know, has also made innuendo that he deserves to be a max player after this deal. All things that say, if he's not going to be there then, and in the last year of his deal, you'll get so much less. They should have moved him at the deadline. Eric Gordon, look, he's been a good camper, and he's been a good veteran, and he's, you know, minded his P's and Q's and done what they've asked him to do, but he wants to play on a winning team. Phoenix knows now and are kicking themselves in the ass because they should have pulled the trigger on the deal, even if they had to sweeten it.
Yeah, they should have.
Because he would have helped them immensely in that Game 7. But now, because of all the financial issues they have, I think it's in their best interest to still make a trade with the Rockets for Eric Gordon because he's one guy out there that could help and does everything they need him to do. I said it last year, Jeremy. I'm going to say it again this year. If we go to Game 1 of the regular season, I would hope that Eric Gordon and Christian Wood are not on this team.
Does it even matter the return?
No, it really doesn't.
Yeah, you know, I'm there
a year ago, I was with you that, look, a number one, even if it was a late one, would have been what I wanted for Eric Gordon. When you found out, at least you believe what you were heard, Phoenix was offering that, and Stone said, I'll put you on pause while I see if I can get a better deal. By the time he went back to it, they didn't want to do it. They felt like they were set, and it went to by the wayside. This year, you take what you can get, right? You get the money off the books. If you can get some young pieces or expiring contracts, so be it. But you can really take a massive step at the end of next season when Wall's contract goes away and you've got money to play with to get true veterans that want to be here.
I don't even really care about getting the money off the books because I don't think that the Rockets are going to be spenders this offseason to where that money can really help.
Hear what I said, for 1 year.
Yeah.
I don't care about the money for this upcoming season.
But they're not going to be on the books the year after because their contract's expiring, unless you're talking about the possibility of re-signing those guys, which I don't see that. Maybe more Wood than Gordon.
I don't think so at all. I think that Wood's now, the word's gotten back to him that the book has been written in a lot of people's minds, both in the organization and around the league, that this dude is hard to deal with. And that's going to play a long way in him getting to wherever his next team is. And if it's here, he's got a whole lot of mending offenses to do before people start considering him part of their long-term solution at the four. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I really believe Gordon can help multiple teams, Philly, Phoenix, amongst just a few, and still has value. But again, like you said, I don't care. If I can get a young guy, if I can get a Cam Johnson from Phoenix, or if I can get one of the young players, and you're not going to get Maxey, but if you could get a young player from Philly, that doesn't have to be a starter per se, but he's a guy that at least you can see if he fits your system and you don't have to pay an exorbitant amount of money to, I'm fine with that. But otherwise, take a veteran with an expiring contract and just clear more cap in another year or so.
Plus, I think it's important, too. I think the most valuable thing is the fact that, you know, it looks like the Rockets are going to be drafting a post with their first three picks, whether it's Smith, whether it's Chet, whether it's Banchero, the most likely. And you don't really want Christian Wood taking the minutes away from a rookie that you're trying to groom.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. If all indications are pointing to you getting one of the three 6'10 and above guys, that's exactly what Christian Wood should be looking over his shoulder at, going, they got my replacement, and he's coming, and he's going to be number three. So when he comes in after they make that selection, I better figure out what's happening real quick, both with myself and with the team, and work something out one way or the other and be in agreement with it, because I'm not going to dictate my future once the season gets going. They're going to dump me as soon as they can if they know that this kid that they draft has any ability at all, because you got to put him on the court.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. You want to be a part of the conversation? We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We come back, shift the conversation to the age of the Houston Texans and why it is encouraging with the rebuild and maybe even the embrace the suck mantra that Blankers loves to talk about. That's next, Killer Bees, ESPN97.5 and ESPN92.5. But first, I want to tell you about my favorite beverage, Gentle Ben Vodka and Gin. It's a Friday. We all know that you're going to be sipping on something tonight, tomorrow, Sunday. Look, it's the fact of the matter. You should give Gentle Ben Spirits a shot. I like a good drink. You like a good drink. Vodka, gin, both part of the rotation for me. And Gentle Ben Spirits, give them a shot. They'll win you over. Gentle Ben, a line of ultra-premium Texas spirits using their state-of-the-art innovative Percedo craft technology that's better in aroma, it's better in purity, and it's better in taste than your favorite brand of vodka or gin. It is unrivaled. Look, you have your favorite brand. I get it. You have your go-to. You have your old faithful. I understand. I was the same way, I'll be honest, until I had a sip of Gentle Ben Vodka and Gin, and it changed the way I look and taste everything that is on the market. Ricky Ford, the founder owner of Gentle Ben Spirits, A&M class of 85, by the way, he had me out to the tasting room in Alvin. He said, try this taste test. Try my stuff, and then try a local rival. We'll put it that way. A blind taste test between the two, and be honest with me. So I took both, and Gentle Ben Vodka was a winner in a landslide. Be like me. Take the challenge. You're going to taste a huge difference just like I did. You're going to put away your old favorite for your new favorite. You can find Gentle Ben Vodka and Gin at Total Wine and Specs. If they're all out, tell them to stock the shelves again. You can also visit them online, gentleben.com. And I mentioned that tasting room in Alvin. Great spot to have a nice drink. Gentle Ben, the union of tradition and invention.
Who's this?
Hey, this is Trey Wingo. You're listening to ESPN 97.5 Houston. Hello.
Turn down for what? Turn down for what?
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. I think it's fair, Blankers, and correct me if I'm wrong here. We wanted the Texans to be a young team next year, even if it meant a couple of wins that you don't get. I didn't want them to be active in free agency, sign a bunch of fighting Rex Burkheads, and find themselves to 8 wins. Draft the rookies, draft the draft class. Maybe you find a young free agent out there in free agency or a couple of dudes that can be a bridge to your young players that you're hoping to draft in the future and build around those guys, develop the young guys.
No, absolutely right. And you know, we've tried to kind of set the table on what we think the plan is and should be, and I think that's where they're at. I think that they had a great draft. They maximized the draft that they had the year before. They realized that they've gotten over that first hurdle, that first plateau of just getting your feet off the ground, like getting going in the right direction. And now, as even Trapp backed me up, which I was happy to hear, the fact that Embrace the Suck is the right campaign for one more season. Because you're not a playoff team yet, and because you don't want to derail it by going too fast too soon and overspending or overextending. So now, if you get one more season, just as you are trying to see what Davis Mills is and can be, you're also evaluating a ton of other young players on the roster as well, so that it sets the table for what you need going forward. If it's another quarterback, so be it. If it's not, you're in a position of luxury where now you can press your foot onto the gas a little bit. Now you can let your pocketbook out a little bit and start looking for some younger, better players that could take you to the next level. And now you might speed up the process. But if you rush it too quick, too soon, you can screw the whole thing up in a hurry if you're worried about winning 8 games this year.
Yeah, and I think we're at the point now where we can feel safe with that, right? Uh-huh. And I think whenever you say embrace the suck, you're talking more about like watching it from a fan's point of view about the Texans.
And it specifically relates to the record, too.
Right. And I think also from a roster building point of view, I think you can look at it from a bunch of different views. I think it's the beauty of the mantra, if you will.
Yep.
From a GM's point of view, you don't want to, you know, build a roster that's going to be living in NFL purgatory. You want to build around the youth. And then also from a fan's perspective, it's like, okay, well, embrace that view, embrace the rebuild, embrace, you know, the Astros losing 100 games and watching the prospects getting called up and turning into a golden era of Astros baseball. Not to say that the Texans are going to do that, but I believe they're kind of on those same lines, right? Where it's not, let's just bring in a bunch of veterans, try to win 8 games, and let's make NRG 60% capacity by giving them a couple of thrills as we beat mediocre teams. They're trying to build a winner and a long-term winner. They're going to do it around the draft pick that they select and trying to mature those players and develop those players. But I think they embrace the suck mantra is also to the fans, too, where it's like, okay, let Caserio do his thing, watch the young players, be optimistic about the young players. You're not saying not to be optimistic about Stingley and Green and Mechie and Harris. You want them to.
I'm saying temper your expectations as it relates to wins and losses. Yep. We all know that there's such a negative connotation associated with losing, and no one likes to lose games, and no one likes to be pointed at and looked at as a loser. But if you temper your expectations for one more season, and you're okay with, I get it, you don't have to like it or love it, but you're okay with it for one more season, it is going to help you more than you can ever understand in the short term. In the long term, in speeding up the rebuild, in rebuilding this roster, in getting you to be able to do what you want to do, which is look at free agency with excitement instead of what other teams are doing, how you can get a couple of guys that can help you take you to the next level, and then you can start looking for wins and losses the following year, and you can evaluate this team on what it's able to do against competition. That's all I'm doing is trying to set expectations where I hope that fans can put them for one more season.
Yeah, and I think it's the way you should be watching the Texans on Sunday. It's not watching it for the final score. It's evaluating Lovie Smith, what he's going to look like as a head coach. It's looking to see if Davis Mills can be the starter beyond 2022. It's looking at an offensive line that you're rebuilding, a receiving core that's young, a running back room that you drafted, a guy on the third day you're hoping can one day be a starter, and then the defense with a lot of really good young pieces. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, not everybody's going to hit. But if they hit on Stingley and Petrie and Harris, like, they have the makings of a good foundation that's going to take some time to grow and some put some pieces around them.
I hope they hit on Green, too.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Selfishly, a friend of the show.
Yeah, but I also think, and a local kid like Travis was talking about, but more so than anything else, a guy that could be a foundational piece that doesn't have to be sexy and make all kinds of, like, highlight maneuver plays. Just do your job, right? Just be the best guard you can be, and it's better than what we've seen in a Texans uniform on the offensive line for quite a while.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776 on a Frankie's Friday Fire. You bring the heat. $50 to Frankie's Italian Kitchen is yours. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Bizzle is in the eye. What's up, Bizzle?
What's going on, fellas? How y'all doing today?
What's up, man?
Great.
Man, I'm doing well. I'm out here in these Houston streets. I hear y'all talking about our Texans, man. I have to chime in a bit.
What you got?
As a season ticket member, I have to say, man, I hated watching this last year. I hated watching it. Being at every game, seeing how empty the stadium was. But we must embrace the suck. Four home games. Win us four home games, and I'll be happy.
For the season, you're going to go games, four wins for the year, and they're all home
all
games. I'm fine with
these
that.
Guys to do is won't be so predictable. Our guys, the past few years, have been so predictable. Run, run, throw. Run, run, throw. Just try some trick plays. Try something fun. Let these guys have fun in football again. It's all I'm asking. All right, I'll shut up and listen. Have a good day,
son. Thanks, man. Appreciate
the call. I got you, Bizzle. 713-780-3776. Frankie's Friday Fire. $50 to Frankie's Italian Kitchen is yours.
Jeremy, if they only win four games, that's fine if they're all at home. I don't care where they win them, and if it's better that Bizzle's got a point, though, that it entices the home crowd, the fan base that they know they've been having a hard time making that a must-attend event like Sundays used to be in this city. If they win four games and they're all at home, that's even better because it excites the home fans for what they've seen in person. It excites me from the standpoint that you're still going to probably have a top three pick. And the fact that you hopefully see progress along the way with what they do the rest of the season as it relates to the rest of the roster. And that's the best you could hope for.
Yeah, it'd kind of be best case scenario, right?
Uh-huh.
I think what he said, too, about how, you know, going to games last year, it was boring, right? It wasn't exciting. It was miserable. There weren't young pieces on last year's team, though. Like, you stripped it all down, and you didn't have a chance to bring in the young pieces that you can get excited about because you didn't have a first, you didn't have a second. Thank you, Bill O'Brien. The ghost is still haunting Houston. But going, like, this year, you have those young pieces. Like, I mean, watching the left guard play isn't something that's going to be all that exciting. But John Metchie playing in the slot, Damian Pierce getting some touches on the defensive side of the ball, watching Derek Stingley match up with the long list of number one receivers that is on the Texans' schedule. What's Petrie going to look like? I think there's a lot to be excited about from a Houston Texan fan, and even on game days. It might not translate to wins, but I'm excited to watch these young pieces and these young rookies, you know, adapt to the NFL to see if they can be a part of, you know, a good group, whether it's on the defensive side or whether it's on the offensive side.
No question. Look, I think that's the beauty of this, right? Because of the draft picks that they've had, it gives fans an opportunity to focus on the individual play as well as just whether the team won or not. And I think that to what Bizzle's point was, too, that goes right into your wheelhouse and your kitchen, is the fact that was a Bill O'Brien or Tim Kelly coach team when you went run, run, pass, punt. Run, run, pass, punt. That was traditionally the way a Bill O'Brien offensive play calling sheet went. That's how Tim Kelly kind of carried the torch. There were times Tim Kelly kind of let his hair down a little bit, and we went, whoa, wait a minute. We're not used to this. Where's it coming from? But it didn't last long. Now I'm excited to see Pep Hamilton. I want to Bizzle's point, I want to see a new way of thinking, a new coach's point of view, using new pieces on the offense and see what Pep Hamilton can do.
Yeah, I don't need, like, a bunch of trick plays.
No, I
agree. To Bizzle's point, like, I don't need a bunch of flea flickers and receivers throwing to quarterbacks. Like, I don't mind breaking it out every now and then. But I just want to see what Pep Hamilton looks like as an offensive coordinator. especially with Davis Mills. But talking about the youth of this team, too, because I think that's one thing we've both been, you know, very vocal about. This team needs to be young. I don't need 31-year-old starters. I don't need Rex Burkhead touching the rock 20 times. And to Nick Caserio's credit, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, where last year I'm not sure he had any other chance. Like, he had no other hope. Like, there wasn't a way to bring in a young running back. But looking at the starters by age this season, Davis Mills, 23. That's exciting. The two running backs, even though Marlon Mack, more of a veteran, he's only 26. Damian Pierce, 22. The receiver room, where Brandon Cooks is like the older veteran, and 28's not young for football, but only 28. Nico Collins, 23. John Metchie, 21. Brevin Jordan, 21. The offensive line is young as well. This is exactly what I wanted to see from the Texans in terms of a youth movement, especially not only the offensive side, but defense is just as young.
This is another way we can see progress, Jeremy, in the fact that, as the I love the phrase you coined, which is the fighting Burkheads. I saw enough of the fighting Rex Burkheads a year ago. Now I want to see the fighting youth looking to make their mark on the NFL. I want to see younger players that are brought in, even if it's on shorter-term deals for this next season or two, so that you can make clear and solid evaluations of players that might have been overlooked, might have been the conversation we had with Travis, have been drafted into the wrong system, to where if they get a second chance and they're fully healthy, that they could be someone that could contribute to your rebuild going forward. That they could contribute now in the games that matter, but more so, they could be a part of the rebuild in which all games are going to matter at a certain point. That's what I would love to see, and that's what I hope that they're after and try to do, instead of bringing regurgitated expatriates on their last leg back into the fold.
713-780-ESPN if you want to get in. 713-780-3776. Chris Sims, we don't always value his football opinion, but he has an assessment on Davis Mills. I want to see that if you agree with. And also, why are we calling any Texan games must wins? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
All right, before we go to the break, tell you about Apollo Men's Health. I was there bright and early this morning. I saw some of the great listeners to ESPN 97.5 in the lobby. They kept telling me about how it's made a difference in their life hearing me talk about and then them pursuing the ways that Apollo Men's Health could help them. For both men and women, it starts with hormone therapy, and they have all the different ways to put more energy back in your life. If it's just as simple as a B12 shot and you feel that boost, then that might be all you need. If you want to get on a workout program, you start with a full body composition analysis and then time to time take another one. Because sometimes you hit those ruts and you go, I'm not making the gains lifting weights that I was before. Am I really doing what I feel like I want to do and losing weight and getting stronger? But then you do the body comp and you say, oh man, my body fat went down, my muscle mass went up, my weight went down. I'm actually doing things that I wasn't aware of. Those are the kind of things that Apollo can really help with. You want to recover quicker because you're sore after the gym? They've got all the HGH peptide therapy methods that can help you get rid of the soreness. You want stuff for your smoothies? Got that too. Two locations to better serve you in downtown Houston. It all starts with the first appointment. Go to ApolloMH.com and book it. When you do, you're going to find out most major insurance is accepted. Discounts for military personnel and first responders. Mention my name, Joel Blank. Get that free body comp on your first visit or a free B12 shot, and then let the process go from there. They're going to put you on a plan that works. They're going to get your results because they're the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real. Fun. Sports. Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Hey, Blank. Dizzle says, I have felt more crowd anxiousness in an Astros regular season game than I have recent Rockets playoff games. Is that on marketing or is that on, dare I say, Fairweather fans?
I mean, don't get me started. We know where
I'd like to get you started.
I know
time
you
do.
But it's Friday, and my man Maple Syrup is playing
fire.
The weekend to remind me that we're close to getting there and enjoying some time off. I don't want to get riled up. Look, I think that Houston fans have bothered me in the fact that when they were at the peak of their game in the last several years from a basketball perspective, it was all about the Warriors and nothing else. So the opening round series against the Timberwolves didn't matter, and the second round series against whoever they played didn't matter because it was expected, so therefore we don't have to be there. We just want to be there for the Warriors series. And you see when the best teams get the best results, in most cases, it's because everyone's all bought in. Everyone's in for the long haul, and they're just juiced about any time you get a chance to take the court. I think because on the flip side, there has been so much extended success with the Astros that there is a level of scrutiny that the other two teams aren't at the level to face. And that is, we don't just want to be good, we want to be great. We don't just want to win, we want to win a lot. We don't want to win a division, we want to win a World Series. And so therefore, you feel more of that. It's like Patrick Creighton's promo and the fact that there were some people losing their mind, but guys like us had some concerns when they started 6-6, because that's not what Astros teams do over the last 5, 6, 7 years. So it's a different level of concern because it's a different level of play for the Astros as opposed to as it relates to the Rockets or the Texans.
Here's a theory, and tell me if I'm just completely nuts here and I got my tinfoil hat on. Do you think it has anything to do with the team that you trust the most? Like, the Astros have been to the World Series 3 times. They won it 2017. You have an element of trust in the Astros where back when the Rockets were in the playoffs, it means that you had James Harden. And I think James Harden lost a lot of trust in this city in playoff moments.
It's absolutely a fair point to consider, Jeremy, because of the fact that it's not just James Harden. It was Chris Paul's hamstring. It was 27 missed threes in a row. It was... You know, you can point to a multitude of different areas where when the lights were the brightest, the stage was the biggest, and the chance was right there for the taking, you fell short, and you did it multiple times. And just with the Texans, I mean, the Kansas City game alone, the chance that you could have hosted the AFC Championship, your first ever trip to a conference championship game, you had a 24-point lead. You had everything sitting there for the taking right in front of you, and you crumbled, you wilted, and dare I say, you choked. Whereas the Astros fight adversity. Every time there's extra fingers pointed at them, more crosshairs on their backs, and more people doubting what they can do, they step up. Even coming out of the aftermath of the cheating scandal, everybody was crapping on them and giving them no chance to get back to another World Series. And if not for McCullers injury, you go back and look at the last couple years, they should have multiple World Series titles under their belt. So they keep doing what everybody says they're not that shouldn't be done or that they can't do, whereas the other two keep doing the exact opposite.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Jason and Champion saying football is the one sport that's so much worse to watch live versus watching on TV.
I couldn't disagree more, depending on where you watch.
I think he's talking about live, right? He means it's better to watch on TV?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If that's exactly how I took it. It depends on where you watch. If you watch a game in Lambeau Field, if you watch a game in Kansas City, if you watch a game in some of the best home environments on the planet that are in this country, there is nothing like it. There is nothing like the excitement, even when a play isn't going on, the aura you feel from the minute you get close to the stadium, to the joy you feel and euphoria if your team actually wins when you're there, and the way you're able to rejoice and celebrate with fellow fans that have like attitudes. I enjoy doing both. But there are certain times where there is nothing like feeling like you're in the actual stadium watching your team.
Yeah, I think there's two ways you can look at it. I'd much rather be in a stadium watching a game versus watching that game on television. Now, am I giving away my Sunday of watching the game that I want to watch, plus the Red Zone channel, plus the afternoon slate, plus the Sunday night game to go to one Texans game? Probably not. Like, to me, it's two different conversations. Like, if you're just looking at the one game in isolation in a vacuum, much rather be there versus not being there. But giving away an entire Sunday to go to a game, that's where I'll agree with Jason and Champion.
Well, but, I mean, depending on how you do it, there's ways that you can watch games while you're at a game. There's ways that you can get out of the stadium in time to see the majority of the late afternoon game and then the Sunday night game.
Yeah, that's true. And it's also different, too. Like, if you're, you know, going to a bucket list type of game or a bucket list type of stadium, then that's something that would alter that as well. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. So Chris Sims is putting together his hashtag Sims Top 40 Quarterbacks, which, whatever. I really don't care about his rankings so much, but it was more about what he had to say about Davis Mills. But if you are interested, Davis Mills was 35th. On his Sims Top 40. But what he said, his assessment of Davis Mills, up and down early last season, that's fair, but came back a different player down the stretch, fair. Knows how to read defenses and move in the pocket. Not a huge arm, but can make all the throws. Texans may have a diamond in the rough, and he deserves a shot to prove it. What do you think of that assessment for Sims? Because he's taking a lot of heat for having this, and Davis Mills, 35 at 40. The Mills Mafia's after him, Blankers.
It's Chris Sims. I mean, Sims is going to do what he does to get clicks and attention and get exactly this reaction from people. And he's just pulling a mini Skip Bayless. And to me, I don't give a rat's ass what Chris Sims has to say. I give all the attention in the world to what Davis Mills has to do and right. What he's going to do. And so It's much like the same thing you brought up that we talked about the other day. I don't care where you rate him as opposed to the other quarterbacks in the same draft that he came out with, because every situation is different and every level of expectation is different. But he's been given an opportunity that when he was drafted, I don't think any of us thought was coming. I don't think anybody thought when he was drafted in the third round, in a year, this guy is going to be your, hands down, your starter and given the keys to the franchise to prove what he can do. But now that he's got it, he's got to capitalize on it. And if he maximizes it, you could be in a really good situation that you never thought you had a chance of being in based on the lack of draft picks and where you were as a franchise. So I don't care what the comparisons are to all the, you know, to everybody from Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence.
Same.
And Wilson and all those other guys. The same way I don't care what Chris Sims has to say with a number attached to Davis Mills of how he thinks he ranks amongst quarterbacks in this game. I care about the progress Davis Mills has made. I care about the opportunity he's been given, and I hope to care about what he's been able to do to maximize those things.
I don't think Sims is wrong here, though. Like, you could nitpick the rankings. Like, I probably would have him higher than 35, but the overall assessment, up and down early last season, came back a different player down the stretch, knows how to read defenses and move in the pocket, not a huge arm, but can make all the throws. Texans may have a diamond in the rough, and he deserves a shot to prove it. Like, that's a totally fair assessment of Davis Mills. I would say that he has a better arm than what Sims is saying, and he's actually not as good at reading defenses and moving the pocket.
Agreed.
As Sims says, but I feel like the assessment's overall very fair.
Well, and I think the other thing that, you know, I always harp on, too, is I think he stares down receivers too much.
Yep.
So those are the kind of progressions that I want to see him do better. I don't say that he has to perfect, but if we see improvements on those little things, it's going to make a whole lot of difference in the big picture evaluation.
Yep. Not Brad Kellner saying, miss me with that, Joel. Everyone knows football is better on TV than in person. Killer Bees don't think so.
No, I don't. Maybe we're old school. You know what? Miss me with your opinion being the high and mighty only thing, word of God. We all are entitled to our opinion.
Did you just call him Nick Saban?
No. I called him BK Jr.
Not NBK, he's just trying to
have a
little fire.
He's the 4-inch patty as opposed to the real man's big-sized patty when you're ordering at BK. He's the BK Jr.
Just a little fire, just trying to have a little bit of fire.
So am I.
SportsMap took a, which we work for, they took a video of the Wheelhouse, Jake, Cody, BK, and they were breaking down three must-win games for the Houston Texans in the 2022 season. How in the world are we calling anything that the Texans are playing in 2022 must-win?
I have no idea. I mean, the only one that makes reasonable sense to me because of just the emotional attachment and personal involvement so many people have is that Cleveland game, simply because of the fact that Deshaun is there, not here. Deshaun didn't want to be here. Deshaun had everything that put a bad, bad, bad look on this franchise. And there's a lot of people that care more about that than they do the game itself, but it would be so much sweeter if you walked away from that, no matter what the rest of the season looked like, saying, yeah, we stuck it to you that day the way you stuck it to us with everything that you did, everything you said, and how you carried yourself off the field and then wanted to carry your ass out of town. So to me, that game I could see fans saying is a must win or they must want to win that one. But other than that, it goes back to everything we said today and otherwise on this show. You're not at a point in your franchise rebuild yet where you should have any must wins.
Yeah, I think that you might there's a better chance of a must-lose game.
I'll give you another one, Jeremy, the Dallas game. Win. Everybody cares about the whole in-state Cowboys thing. It's not a must-win for the franchise. It would be great if they won. It's going
to
be one people
sticking it to Dallas,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's more Houston sticking it to Dallas than it is like, oh, the Texans must win a game in 2022.
I mean, look, if they win two games all year and it's Cleveland and it's Dallas, I'm the happiest guy on the planet because they did what I needed them to do, but they did what the fans wanted them to do.
I mean, I think everybody wants the Texans to win more games than we do.
Like, that's true. I agree with that.
You and I are going to be watching the Texans games, and we're going to be watching the – like, I don't think we're rooting for them to lose. We just see the benefits of them losing. But you and I are going to be watching it from, like, okay, what does Davis Mills look like? Mm-hmm. What does Derek Stingley look like? Is Kenyon Green looking like a franchise left guard? Is, like, Laremy Tunsil going to stick around? Can Titus Howard be the future at right tackle?
Mechie.
I mean, all the young guys. Like, we're going to be looking at it, and I think we'll be excited about it, to be perfectly honest with you. I'm looking forward to the Texans season to watch the young players play and develop. I have zero interest on the win-loss record. I know I sound like a broken record saying that. It's just it's crazy to me that, like, wins and losses matter if you're a Houston Texans fan in 2022. It blows my mind.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And, I mean, fans are going to fan, and we're going to be who we are. I think that I hear some of the things, some of the perspectives that the Wheelhouse has. I know how everybody has their own, just like what I just said to BK Jr. Everybody's entitled to their own opinions. But, like, you know what? We watch this team with a mindset of not only for what we do, but what can be done so that they can be as good as they can be. And sometimes as good as they can be is not a playoff team that's getting better. And other times it can be a team that can take a quick jump in year three. And it all depends on, like you said, some of the matchups we're watching and then how it translates to what they can do the following season, draft, free agency, and then going into the year. I don't see any need to look for must wins. I don't see any need to, like, have my heart crushed if they lose a regular season game. I see the need to see development. I see a need to see a roster that has youth that can play. And if I see those things and you and I are having those text conversations during games, we can joke about what we're going to hear and the backlash we're going to get on a Monday. But as long as we see what we need to see so that we feel like this franchise is going in the right direction, that is a biggest step as we can possibly say this team has done in the last 3 years.
And that's embracing the suck. Indeed. From a fan perspective. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we come back, what is the concern level for this Alex Bregman slump? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, we've been calling it a Frankie's Friday Fire for a reason. That means you guys got to get to Frankie's, and you have the chance to do so on us if you bring the fire and you get that $50 gift card. If you don't, it's still worth it to get to Frankie's. But I'm encouraging you to call ahead and get a reservation because this is the final weekend for the original location as they are moving and will be at the new location May 27th. That means the time is ticking. It's all because of you and the way that you've supported Frankie's Italian Kitchen, Chris and his staff, and basically said, this is where I want to be for Italian food and a great environment. And now Chris has heard that, seen that, and said, we need a bigger place. We need to be able to go inside, outside, a bigger bar, live music, and a way that people can spread out and have even more fun than just the best Italian food in the area. So that's what they're doing. So call Frankie's Italian Kitchen, or better yet, first, go online, frankiesitaliankitchentx.com. See the menu, see all the specials. I mean, tomorrow night, it's another steak night. 2-inch thick bone-in ribeyes, 30 ounces per steak. And then everyone needs to come out because, like I said, it's the last weekend at this location. They always have some great seafood pasta specials on Friday night. They have tons of great food, and you're going to love every bit of it. Tell them I sent you by. Go to Frankie's Italian Kitchen, TX.com.
ESPN 97.5.